Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman. So last night we had the news that Damian Green has resigned, or in other terms, politely been sacked, depending on which side you're going on. And Isabel, what is the fallout from this, and how is the Conservative Party reacting to the news that Theresa May has decided to axe her first Secretary of State?
Well, I think a number of Damian Green's colleagues are very upset that he's gone because they feel that the investigation was triggered by allegations that they didn't think merited such a lengthy investigation. But I think they're even more annoyed actually with the Metropolitan Police, because what started with being a newspaper article from someone who the investigation described as plausible, alleging that Damian Green had touched her leg and had also sent her suggestive text messages, then moved to becoming an investigation about porn on Damian Green's parliamentary computers many years ago. And a debate has reopened in the Conservative Party as to whether the police can actually be trusted. The last time we had this row, obviously, was over Plebgate. And there are some MPs who are quite agitated by this, but not as agitated as David Davis threatened to be before this investigation concluded. He's now firmly in place as Brexit Secretary, having threatened to resign over the issue if Damian Green had to go.
And James, do you think Theresa May is going to replace Damian Green and reappoint a first Secretary of State?
Well, we know that there's not going to be an immediate reshuffle, so I think she will take the Christmas holidays to think about it. What I suspect this has settled is the argument as to whether she should reshuffle in January or wait until May. I think it now will be in January, because she needs to find a Cabinet Office minister, someone to chair all those Cabinet committees. I think it'd be a real mistake for her not to appoint a first Secretary of State, because it is almost inevitable that in the next 12 months, Theresa May's time is going to be almost entirely dominated by Brexit. So she needs an effective domestic deputy who she is prepared to let get on with the job and take decisions. Otherwise, the government is, despite all her protestations, going to just be about Brexit.
Now, Isabel, the role of First Secretary of State previously when May appointed Damian Green was because it was one of her closest allies and someone she really trusted. There have been a few names mooted so far, one being Jeremy Hunt, who spoke today on the Today programme, put an admirable effort sticking to the party line. There's also been a suggestion of William Hague and Amber Rudd. Who do you think her closest allies are at the moment when she looks at her cabinet?
Well, I think Hunt and Rudd are good, strong allies generally for Theresa May. Hunt did put in a very good performance on the Today programme this morning. And it's also worth remembering how much he has shouldered as health secretary as well. He has not been popular with doctors for a number of years now, but has kept going and has really sort of stuck to his guns on reform in that, and is known to be frustrated about the lack of progress on social care, which was one of the areas that Damian Green was overseeing. Now, obviously, the Conservative Party is very nervous about doing anything on social care, but Jeremy Hunt actually sees the effects on the health service of not coming up with a long-term sustainable financial settlement for the social care sector. And if he were to move into that position, he would also have a good policy reason for doing so, because he understands one of the key reforms that Damian Green had been charged to work on. He is someone who is loyal to prime ministers. David Cameron really trusted him as health secretary, and he seems to have been allowed to get on with things by Theresa May as well, which is no mean feat given how little she trusts people, even those who have been long serving in cabinet roles. But Amber Rudd, similarly, is very trustworthy and also someone who will take hard knocks in politics. And I think both of them have got a strong case to take that job if Theresa May decides to have a replacement for Damian Green, because it's not a necessary role. It's one that she created to really bolster herself in cabinet. And I think that the most important thing about the First Secretary of State has to be how they can help Theresa May survive, given the number of political knocks she takes on a daily basis at the moment, rather than actually carrying out a certain policy role, although there are really important challenges that Damian Green has had in his in-tray before he resigned or was sacked, depending on how you look at it.
I think the problem is that the cabinet ministers who Theresa May is closest to trust the most, James Brokenshire and Karen Bradley, are way too junior to be First Secretary of State. I think, as Isabel says, Jeremy Hunt and Amber Rudd are both, they're not going to cause Theresa May any trouble, they're not going to scheme against her, but they both have leadership ambitions. And I think one of the reasons why she has tried, I think twice now, to get William Hague to come back, is that that's someone she trusts, but someone who wouldn't be seen as a leadership contender. It wouldn't look like she was trying to anoint her successor if she appointed William Hague to this job, because I don't think William Hague is going to be the first Prime Minister from the Lords in over 100 years. And so I think this is part of her problem, which is that cabinet ministers who she really trusts are too junior to do the job and not up to it. But anyone else in the cabinet, it would look like an interference in the succession process, which I think she'll be very loath to do. But I think personally she has to take that risk. You know, and in a way, if Jeremy Hunt or Amber Rudd was to make a great success of a job, and that was to turn them into the heir apparent, that wouldn't be a bad thing for her or the government.
Now, barring any more polite resignations or expected sackings, this will probably be the last coffeehouse shots of the year. Looking back, Isabel, how would you describe Theresa May's position as she goes into the Christmas holiday compared to after the snap election? Does she look stronger?
Well, she certainly looked stronger than straight after the snap election, and again straight after her disastrous conference speech. And in a sense, moving Damien Green doesn't immediately weaken her as Prime Minister, because at least it suggests that she has the power to remove people. I think the effects of Green's sacking will be felt over the longer term, where she feels that she doesn't have as many allies around her in cabinet battles, for instance, particularly over Brexit. And who knows what Green might get up to on the back benches as well, given he's pretty pro-Remain as an MP and also quite anti-authoritarian. So there are various things that he could, if he chooses to work on himself if he wanted to. I think she's got a reasonably strong position, partly just because she's survived for so long after a disastrous election. It's quite impressive for her to have weathered so many cabinet resignations, a bad conference speech, and pretty much the whole of this year not going entirely as she expected, or at all as she expected, in fact.
James, would you say the main factor still keeping her in number 10 is that there's no one obvious to replace her?
Yes, and the Tory party fears what it could do to itself during a leadership contest. The levels of political violence that it might carry out on itself. I mean, that is something that is helping her. I think the other thing which is worth bearing in mind is that one of her advantages is that no one thinks she's going to lead the Tories into the next election. So therefore, there is no need to get rid of her now, because you can wait, let her do more of the Brexit stuff, let her make some of the difficult compromises, and then get there. I still think this, which is, when you look at it, this is the most remarkably open Tory leadership field in a generation. I think 6 to 9 months ago, you'd have got very long odds on the idea of Jeremy Hunt being the next Prime Minister. But he is now being talked up by a lot of people. One cabinet minister who is widely regarded as having leadership ambitions was giving me the hard sell on Jeremy Hunt just the other day. You know, why this guy is the right choice. So I think this is a reminder of how many of these kind of cycles we're going to go through before she steps down in 2021. And so I think wait to see, that will help keep her in place for some time, that there is no obvious alternative at the moment.
Now, I know we've all learnt this year that we really shouldn't be making predictions, but do you think that this time next year, Theresa May will still be Prime Minister? Isabel, you first.
I think she's got a better chance of surviving 2018 than I might have thought straight after the snap election, for the reasons that James has just listed, really. But that said, we thought at the end of 2017 that Theresa May was a sort of polling phenomenon and that voters just couldn't get enough of her. So things could turn around quite dramatically. And I do think that the Conservatives need to really think really hard about the Corbyn phenomenon, because there's still enough of a visceral feeling about him for them to forget that actually a lot of people in the country seem to have warmed to his message. People like Ruth Davidson have obviously warned about this in the latest issue of The Spectator, and it's something that the party more widely needs to take on board in terms of the way it responds to the ideas and campaigns that Labour has. I think there are small things like the choice of questions at PMQs that this week wasn't particularly good from Corbyn because he just resorted to the NHS but didn't actually know what he wanted to ask. But homelessness, for instance, it's the sort of thing that the Conservatives could quite easily decide is not a politically salient issue and is a small issue. But actually, it's the kind of thing that on social media can become a very powerful message about the Tories' priorities. And I've just seen that creeping up the agenda at Prime Minister's Questions and in political debate more widely about rising homelessness levels. It's something that the Conservatives need to catch on about earlier rather than waiting for it to become a political problem that they just haven't got any chance of addressing.
Look, we've seen political volatilities at the last election on a scale that we haven't seen since after the Great Depression or after World War One. And I think one lesson of that is that we should be very wary about making predictions. But this year, the kind of big point is that Michel Barnier says he wants this Brexit, the phase two of the Brexit thing, done by October 2018. That, I think, is the big challenge for her. I still think that Brexit is the issue that has the biggest potential to bring her down. But I would say a word of caution, which is when the story broke about Harvey Weinstein masturbating into a plant pot, I don't think any of us imagine that that would lead to two cabinet ministers having to resign. And I think that just shows you how, you know, the butterfly flaps its wings, the kind of chaos theory of history and all that stuff, is we should be cautious about making predictions, that we are in a period of incredible political volatility. And to touch on what Isabel was saying about Jeremy Corbyn, that cuts both ways. You can argue on the one hand, but the volatility is what is opening the door to Corbyn, who is so outside the mainstream. On the other hand, you can make the kind of Ruth Davidson argument, which is the volatility means that in 4 years' time will have gone for a whole nother cycle and he'll be out of fashion again. You know, it'll seem like another age when the crowd was singing, "Oh, Jeremy Corbyn" at Glastonbury, and they'll have moved on to something else. And I think it is very, very hard to tell what is going to happen. And I think that you can't quite know, what's going to happen with Brexit, partly because you can't know what's going to happen with Europe. What is going to happen in the Italian elections? What kind of government will we end up in Germany? So I think you should carry on listening to Coffee Hour Shots, because it's going to be another unpredictable year in which we will be better at reacting than predicting, I suspect.
Thank you, Isabel. Thank you, James. And thank you to Nick Hilton, who produces this podcast. And you can subscribe to this podcast on the iTunes store. It's called Coffee Hour Shots. And we have a special Christmas offer for podcast listeners of a year's subscription to the magazine for £99, which is 60% off the cover price. We'll also throw in a bottle of Berry Brothers champagne. Just go to spectator.co.uk/Christmas podcast offer.